We're here with Robert Lopez. Now, he is CEO and founder of Prison Prevention Info. Robert, I want to welcome you this opportunity to be on LA Miracle Cure. And of course, we want to talk a little bit about today, medical cannabis, the world of legalization, and of course, your expertise in prison prevention. So welcome. And in the spotlight, tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get involved with prison prevention?
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me here. And it's a pleasure and a wonderful opportunity to get a chance to speak to everyone here. I got involved because I was one of those at-risk youth who got himself in trouble and ended up having to go through the system and understand the system from being there. And we've seen a lot of youth come into the system and have their lives completely changed. And we feel that marijuana has taken a lot of opportunities away from so many minorities that would have been able to have thrived and prospered for simple possession or simple use. We understand that discriminatory law enforcement has existed in this country from the founding, and we're trying to make a difference and help people see that we could actually make a difference by helping at-risk youth in many ways, and we do support the cannabis industry.
Well, now that's interesting that you would say that the evil that lurks within now becomes the friend that could be the mantra to releasing a lot of young people from this horrible inevitability of being involved with an illegal substance or marijuana, or as we call it now that it's become legal in over 34 states and soon legal in California, we call it cannabis. And so we're here talking with you. Tell us a little bit about exactly what is your movement, because I feel that you, from the first moment I met you, that you have a real passion for the youth. So tell us a little bit about your movement, if you can.
Our mission is to reduce mass incarceration by working with at-risk youth and by providing mentors and volunteers who are willing to help some of these youth make better decisions and put them on the right path. We understand that mass incarceration is big business, and too many of our youth are being sacrificed for big business, and we need to change that. We all need to be able to understand that this is a problem. We only represent a small part of the population in the world, but yet we incarcerate 25% of our population when we only represent 5% of the population, but we incarcerate over 25. One third of all women are incarcerated in the United States throughout the, compared to any, outdoing everyone throughout the world. Wow. And these are things that we need to change.
Right. And what we're talking about now is, well, we know that it is a Schedule I drug, cannabis is. And we know that the federal government sees it as such and has the right at any given time to supersede a state. And speaking of states, now you are in Arizona. So that's a sister state to California. So now tell us a little bit about, before we talk any more about prison prevention, and the actual statistics of who's behind bars, let's talk a little bit more about what have you seen, and is Arizona marijuana friendly? And tell us a little bit about what you've seen, the changes in the culture and the changes in opportunity, the money and law enforcement.
Well, as you know, California and Arizona are completely different as far as Arizona being a red state. They're very conservative out here. At all the major high offices in the state are all Republican. We have a Senate-controlled Republican Senate, a House that's controlled by the Republicans as well. They have they've always been tough on crime, and marijuana has been something that has actually helped people be able to. I guess I'm getting thrown off a little bit off track here, but I feel that we still have a long way to go. The law enforcement out here has been very tough on people that possess or use marijuana. Things are finally changing, and we're hoping that now, with all the states in the west part of the country, either medical or recreational has gotten Arizona to finally come on board and understand the importance of allowing medical marijuana to take place. And we're actually surprised that we've been able to even make this kind of progress. We still have a lot more to go. But I think that, us being a state, we are definitely behind, your state, California, which we all feel that are completely ahead of everyone when it comes to the industry.
Well, right. Now, we do know that, what I think when we think about Arizona, and that's why I'm so glad you're with us today. When we think about Arizona, I know I think about some of the tough things that the governor, and I think there's a police chief or a sheriff over in Arizona that has been very vocal and very public about their stance on immigration and on a lot of different things that I could foresee that even though California is legal, that Arizona might be legal, but then be very harsh to a certain set of people. Would that be so, do you think?
Oh yes, yeah, that takes place, and I'm sure in other states as well. Discriminatory law enforcement has taken place throughout this country, and it continues to do so. Arizona it has really been tough on any type of drugs, and marijuana. I remember growing up, a simple. Having just a small roach can get you a felony, or
Wow.
and it all depends on the police officer. A lot of police officers are real strict, and it all depends on the person that's being charged.
Yeah, I get you. What you're saying is that the police officer, in the inception of the crime or discovering the crime, has the right to set up the report so that it is either a minuscule infraction or a ticket, or it's jail time. It depends on their attitude and their way of writing the report that takes it from a misdemeanor and just dust in the pocket, as you say, a roach, or to a felony, where a half a joint would get you time. And let's talk a little bit about that. Robert, so I know that you're very well versed in the prison prevention paradox. I know that you are heading this up in your state, and I know that there aren't a lot of people like you who still are advocates for those who cannot speak for themselves. And, we're all for punishment for the crime. But when there has been a nonviolent crime and it has to do with cannabis, where you find someone else is making billions, not just millions, but billions, and if you have, let's say, a pound, then you are sentenced to 15 years. So let's talk about, what does a felony do to a man? I mean, why is that such a bad thing to have happen? What do you relinquish when you have a felony?
Well, a felony sets you back in many ways. There's certain jobs you're not going to be able to get. There's also certain licenses that you won't be able to obtain as well. There's a lot of opportunities will pass your way. It'll make it tougher on you. And even when it comes to other business opportunities that come your way. And recently we used to have it in this state where if you had a simple possession of marijuana, you couldn't even get any type of benefits, whether it came to any type of assistance.
You mean like in case you were with the felony, you couldn't get hired, so maybe you needed food stamps for your family and you needed Medi-Cal, then you could not get any of those because those are services that are reserved for those who don't have felonies. Is that what you're saying?
But it was the way it was written into the laws, it was written where it was only a felony for possession or for use or for a drug felony. So if you had a drug felony of any sort, and marijuana being included, you couldn't get assistance, any type of cash assistance. You wouldn't be able to get food stamps, housing. And so it really set people back. So what it would do is it would take people to resort to having to, you know, get money any way they could. And eventually they would end up, you know, picking up another charge because they weren't able to get the job opportunities that you would be able to have over a simple possession that stays with you.
I see what you're saying. All right. So let's talk about licensing because I like the way you put that. And further in the show, we will talk to you a little bit about some of the wonderful things you're doing, such as a 3-minute pitch, fast pitch is what you call it, a 3-minute fast pitch. And that caught my eye. So this will be right down your alley. We'll get to that in our second segment. But right now, you just spoke about, let's say, a person who finds their talent surrounds the growing and the procurement of cannabis for medical purposes. And if they want to become legitimate in California, they're going to have a written statement signed by the landlord allowing cannabis on the property, a diagram of the premises. They're going to have a $5,000 security bond. They will have to have a letter from the landlord, at more or less as in partnership, a life scan, that's where you do the fingerprints and everything that you have pops up. So Robert, it sounds like if you have had one of these infractions or felonies or misdemeanors in the past, that not only would you not be able to get some relief help, but you're not going to be able to go legitimate either. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, it's held back many people for that particular reason. We lost a generation of minorities that could have been involved in this industry, but for a simple possession of marijuana or use of marijuana, or some of the stuff that they're doing now, that they do a lot of at these events now, in California. I mean, people were serving, 20 years for trying to do the same thing. And some people got away with it and they've been able to, obtain a license and, move on. And a lot of people were taken down by it. And a lot of people that actually have a lot of know-how that should be in this industry and have paid their dues are not going to be able to be in it legitimately.
Right.
Because of me. And we're hoping that we can change that with an event that we're going to be putting together because we want to help the next generation of youth. And it doesn't matter, what color you are. You should all be given that opportunity to, take part in this growing industry.
Well, and I want to just say this. I want to say this because you said youth. And forgive me, but I think it's important that people know that what you speak of is the professional aspect of procuring, cultivation, manufacturing, retail, testing, micro business, distribute transportation. I mean, owner operator, dispensary. These are all the various different jobs and job descriptions that are coming up in this multi-billion dollar industry. And it's very interesting because there will be a need for all of those people to play all of those parts. So what you're talking about is training young people to understand and to be professionals in the industry. Is that what you're saying? So you're talking about mentorship from those who are in cannabis? Explain that to us.
Well, this is a perfect opportunity for any cannabis leaders that want to step up and help uplift youth by giving them opportunities so they could actually take these training courses on becoming extractors, growers, bud tenders, people that are in this fast-growing industry. And we could actually take allow people to get educated on these positions that are going to be made available and well-paying jobs. And we can do some good. You know, and I think this is a perfect opportunity for everyone that's in the industry to be able to come together and say, let's work together at helping as many at-risk youth as possible so they can have the opportunity. A lot of youth look up to people that are already in the industry. And I think they owe it to them to say, look, we're looking out for you guys and we want to be able to support you guys and help you guys. And we want to welcome you guys to in this industry. And if they can provide the equipment, you know, the instructors, they can provide funding. We could have a university dedicated to training people in this growing industry.
Wow. And we expect the cutting edge and the truth from the players in the industry. Everybody, you're listening to LA Miracle Cure.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, so we're back. And I just want to know, you know, inquiring minds want to know, and we have Robert Lopez in our spotlight, and it makes it really easy for us to find out some information about cannabis. You know, the questions that we always want to ask. One of them is medicinal cannabis. I mean, just who is that for? Who's using that? And I have a page here from Robert's 501c3 that says, we encourage doctors across America to embrace promising medical cannabis research that has led to helping many Americans alleviate the side effects associated with multiple sclerosis, lupus, PTSD, pain, epileptic seizures, Alzheimer's disease, glaucoma, anxiety, HIV and AIDS, chemotherapy, hepatitis C, and in treating cancer with cannabis oil. Wow, that is a mouthful. So, in your mind, and your experience, have you seen that the shift from medical marijuana procurement to recreational? I mean, this is what California is going through, 20 years serving patients to January serving those who are enthusiasts. How do you think that is going to affect our young people?
That's a very good question. It might have an impact on them. I think there's going to be some youth, depending on some of the role models, you know, that, you know, openly smoke cannabis. It might, you know, encourage some of them to do the same. It could actually have an effect. I mean, to be honest.
Well, I will be honest and say that, you know, I am a person who finds that there are so many laws that are being created. I mean, it is, I met with a gentleman who's one of our sponsors at LA Miracle Cure, and I could not believe that he had two complete phone books filled with laws that were proposed, but not necessarily yet written in stone. They were still going back and forth, and this was just for California's Los Angeles greater area. So it was very interesting to me to see all of these laws. And I mean, let's face it, Robert, nobody is going to go door to door on the 1st of January and empower the citizens with these laws. You're not going to know about the law that, oh my goodness, social outdoor consumption is not approved unless you light up a joint or light up one of your vape pens or whatever, and you start smoking, and then the police arrest you because that is not okay. You see? So I think the misnomer here is that people are not going to be well informed about the changes in the law. Can you speak to that for us?
You know, I agree. There's a lot of people that are unaware of what's going to change out in California. A lot of states have always looked to California as the leader in the industry. California does things that most states wish they could do. I mean, that's why everybody comes out to California. You know, having the High Times Cannabis Cup, the Kush Stock, the Chalice. I mean, for everybody to set up and, you know, I mean, just open up house and allow people to just come in and medicate and, you know, sample and you know, and buy. And it's just, you know, a market that's open. Now things will change. I'm not even sure if those type of big events are going to be able to take place until they can get the laws straight. And I think that is going to make
sense. That is right, because how can they have an open, because what we witnessed at the High Times Harvest Cup was absolutely, unequivocally, the most shocking thing I'd ever seen.
you know, it's great.
But, I mean, you know, I'm just a novice. I'm just the messenger. So I felt it was necessary to find more people who were actively involved, so I went. But I was very shocked to know at the level that people are now already involved in the procurement of cannabis. It is at a feverish pitch. So your thoughts are that there won't be any more types of events that feature cannabis and cannabis sales?
I think until they can get their laws together, they're going to have to come in and maybe change up a few things the way they're written, because there's a lot of contradictory laws that are taking place, and it's got people nervous and scared because they're not really sure what's going to end up happening. And then with this new administration, you know, it just makes people, you know, really uncomfortable. I think a lot of people realized after the new law went into effect in California, or when it goes into effect, that some of them are going to, you know, have buyer remorse and maybe say, hey, maybe we should have kept things the way they were. You know, we didn't know how well we had it until, you know, it's taken away. But, you know, you're putting, you know, everything into the hands of these lawmakers. And, you know, they're going to try to make the laws to suit them and, you know, put you at a disadvantage if they can, you know, but the people need to speak up and go out there and vote and, you know, speak out. And you know, this has been an injustice that's occurred, you know, for centuries. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no, you know, the laws have been written as far as with, you know, illegal drugs and how they got that way. You know, we're always targeted for certain people. And but now it's being so accepted from all races that, you know, they're actually going to have to do something about it. They can't just target a particular minority group and say, okay, we can continue to, you know, allow, you know, this injustice to continue and it's okay. Now they have to actually do something. That's why they're willing to do something now about the opiate addiction. You know what I mean? Because that's, you know, hurting the country and that's, you know, something that's going to end up having to, you know, change as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do believe that cannabis can be the conduit to step in between, you know, and ease people off of the opiates instead of easing people onto heroin, because that's really what's happening. When the pills dry up, when the prescriptions are no longer given, then you have people. And you know what they say, Robert, just for the edification of my listening audience, they say it takes one surgery and one prescription. If you take it as it's prescribed and you have 24 to 36 pills of, let's say, Oxycontin or Norco or hydrocortisone, any of these derivatives can make you addicted. So that by the time you get your second prescription, you're already addicted. Can you believe that? That is how, what a crisis that we have. And there's been all these horror stories about how the pharmaceutical companies have been pumping pills into these small pharmacies in middle America. We don't really see that so much in LA. We do see it on a more, I guess, with celebrities. We do see it in that respect, but not to the tune that Ohio and Nebraska and Montana, the Midwest, not like they're suffering. It's unfathomable what's happening. I want to take us back. We were talking a little bit about, just a couple of minutes ago, about the black market. Well, we didn't say the black market, but what we did say, and I love you for how you put that. You said people are really, really fearful. And so when people are fearful, they do things to protect themselves. I mean, that's our fight or flight nature, right? So when you are getting licensed by the state of California and by the city in which you're going to operate your business, you're going to have to actually relinquish every name, your DBA, your social security number, your tax ID, if you're a sole proprietor, the address, the contact information, and your seller's permit. You also, for each owner, such as, let's say you have a cousin, you know, we all have that cousin that's back somewhere back east who has it going on, who's going to give us $50,000 to start our business off. Everybody's got the cousin or the uncle. Well, now, in the laws in California, it says for each owner, they're considering an investor, an owner, social security number, date of birth, address, email, phone numbers, criminal background disclosure, live scan certificate, fingerprint date, and an ATI number, plus their driver's license number, and this is unbelievable, their residential address. I mean, I don't give all this information to anybody about myself, you know? I mean, right now, my address is not my address. I mean, who would do this? So you're absolutely right when it comes down to being able to protect the business and their selves and their investments and their families, they would have to go underground. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. And that's what will end up happening. They end up, you know, making these laws that are just hindering, you know, the expansion of the cannabis industry. It's going to take it underground, and more people will end up, you know, taking those chances because this is too hard to go through all those, jump through all those loops.
Well, you know, I just don't see how, if you have a dispensary and your dispensary is on the corner and you sell a pound an hour of cannabis, right? And I'm over here in my apartment and I sell an ounce an hour. I mean, who's going to go to jail? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Who is going to go to jail? Robert, tell us.
Well, I think we all know the answer to that. And that's the way that the laws have been written for centuries. Certain people, you know, are allowed to be able to do certain things and other people are not, you know, and they make it tough, you know, for individuals to be able to compete with big business. And I think that's what it's going to end up coming down to. Big business will end up taking over this industry, and eventually the government will have to reclassify it and regulate and tax it and try to squeeze as many, you know, of the younger or the smaller entrepreneurs out of business. But, you know, some of them will end up, you know, having to take the business underground, and, you know, the way it's always been. There could be a compromise if everybody votes and works together, and you know, and hopefully big business isn't too greedy, and they're not trying to, you know, have the laws all written in their, you know, to favor them, and that's what's going on. It's going on out here in Arizona. You know, a lot of
bring us around. Give us a little example, without naming names, of what you feel the climate is in Arizona opposed to California.
Well, California, you know, the cannabis industry has been more laid back. I guess you could, we say that, you know, there's a lot of hippies in the cannabis industry, especially out of California. And that's why they're so loving and giving. And they're more about the people. But when you come out a little bit further out, you know, this way, it becomes all about big business. And a lot of them don't want, you know, smaller, you know, cannabis entrepreneurs, you know, what's it called, taking over their business. So they're going to try to make these laws written for them to be able to have the advantage over anyone trying to get into this business.
And so we have in Los Angeles, just point intended, we have something called social equity. What they say about social equity, of course, all my listening audience out there, you can go to America Out Loud and go directly to LA Miracle Cure and take a look at all of our shows that we have there. And if you want to go to the King of LA, you can find Virgil Grant, who speaks directly about the social equity program and what that's going to look like. Robert, for your edification, they are going to empower Black and brown people to step up first and be licensed, to have that opportunity. They say that in Los Angeles, if you do not step up in the first period of time that is offered, then that will be the last time that you have an opportunity to be involved in a billion-dollar business. That's what they say. Also, another thing I think that's really important for people to recognize is that you said earlier that there was an entire generation lost to cocaine and to crack and to the war on drugs. You know, you were really right about that. An entire generation. Now, where are they, Robert? Are they in prison? And will they ever get out? And what's your thought about the prisons now that they hold people and they are privatized?
It's big business. It's been big business, and we were making progress during the Obama administration, they were talking about reducing mass incarceration. President Obama went ahead and did away with private prisons having a part in the mass incarceration and throughout the federal system. But the new administration came in and reversed that. And a lot of the private prisons were very, excited and happy about, the new administration taking over, just like law enforcement. They finally had somebody that they could, that they could support and say, hey, you speak for us, because it's always been a divider. You're either for law enforcement, and if you're not, then they don't want nothing to do with you. And it's been tough on minorities because, there's been a lot of things that have taken place in the criminal justice system that have been wrong, and they allow it. Even with police officers, a lot of times the department will know, they have a bad apple in the crew, and they'll allow it to continue, and then they'll cover it up, and it'll affect so many lives, because when people try to speak out and say, hey, this is happening in our communities, we're being harassed, we're being taken advantage of, this is going on, most people, don't even want to hear it,
Absolutely. And it's like they feel that you've brought it on yourself because of your economic system, a situation, because you're underemployed, because you're not employed, because, you're in a gang, all the stereotypes that go with being poor and looking for a way out. And that's what I think is most important for people to understand. Nobody really wants to break the law. People just want to have the same opportunity at having families and feeding them and clothing them and living the good life in America. And we all know that takes money. So we'll be right back. You're listening to LA Miracle Cure. Don't go away.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
So, now that we've heard all about the pros and cons and the actualities of what's going on in the cannabis world and what has been going on, let's talk a little bit more to Robert with Prison Prevention Info, and let's find out what he's doing to save the young people, shall we say? Would that be a good way to put it, Robert?
Yes. Well, like I said, our mission is to reduce mass incarceration by providing services for at-risk youth. We currently provide temporary housing for any youth that we come across that are out in the streets that are homeless. We feed them, we buy them clothing, and we help him or her with any programs that they need to get their life together. So if they have mental health issues, some drug issues, some of them might even need a reach out to a family member. We'll do everything we can to try to help them out.
I think that's fantastic. So you're able to triage them, find out what the problem is, put them in housing. Do you get them back in school? What's the education piece? Once a child is outside of parents' control, on their own, I mean, is there hope to get them back in school, or what would you say to that?
Yes, there is. We provide tutoring services. And we work with them on being able to get them, you know, back at their grade level. A lot of times, they've fallen behind. They've had parents who haven't, paid attention to them or have neglected them as far as helping them with their homework. Sometimes it's because both parents are incarcerated. They're staying with their grandmother, and once they get to a certain age, their grandmother can't control them anymore. Maybe the mom's on drugs and the father's incarcerated. It becomes a cycle, and then you end up having the next generation that is going to relive that same cycle, where they're going to start getting into trouble, getting into and going through the system. And we need to break that vicious cycle.
Absolutely. And you know what, Robert, not to interrupt, but doesn't it seem that particularly with young people, when they're right in the middle of that, they don't even recognize that it's a generational cycle that needs to be broken. I mean, they don't see themselves that they're playing out the same lifestyle or the same choices or the same lack of opportunity as maybe parents or grandparents before them. It's very interesting how the trait value can cause young people to kind of repeat the same mistakes of the parents. What do you do? Do you step in and provide mentorship? Does that turn it around? Or is it a day-by-day hand-holding, pairing them with resources, finding them a place, just getting them back on square one? Tell us.
Well, it's a little bit of everything. You definitely have to provide the resources, but having a volunteer or mentor step in and help that particular youth make better decisions, and show that youth that somebody cares about that person. They care about their decisions. They care about their future, and that makes so much of a difference. A lot of the youth that are being raised today that are at risk are youth that are being raised by a single mother who might have two jobs and are leaving their kids at home, and their kids are, coming and going as they please, hanging out with the wrong crowd. They need father figures, and that's been something that's hurt our generation by all these fathers that have been incarcerated and these kids being raised by single mothers. They do not know how to behave in a relationship when they get older. They don't know how to treat their kids. They don't know what things they need to do to be a good father. And those are the things that we need to be able to provide. There are plenty of young men out there that could actually become volunteers, become mentors, and help. And if you can change one life, it'll change the lives of that person's family. Because that's what you need to. We need to raise men, real men.
Absolutely. And,
not allow the system to take them and then put them in a situation where they're going to end up coming out and they're going to be at a disadvantage. And before you know it, the kids that they have are going to end up going through the same cycle. And we need to be able to break that cycle and get these kids.
And you know what? I agree with you, because we have the resources. We have the intelligence, we have the money, we have the manpower. I mean, you know what? For the first time, I think, in America's history, we are wide awake. We are wide awake to not only the injustices, but the people who are receiving favors and preference are waking up to the fact that they are preferred. We're seeing an awakening in America. A lot of people see it as a negative thing, but I think it's really positive when we're all just wide awake, because then we can find solutions to help one another. I want to ask you, I noticed that you have a pitch, 3-minute pitch event coming up. Now, my listening audience is very diverse. Perhaps they know what a pitch is and perhaps they don't. But I would like you to explain to us, why do I need a 3-minute pitch?
Okay, well, a 3-minute fast pitch is to allow you to have an opportunity to introduce your company, product, or service. to one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. So we try to help as many up and coming cannabis entrepreneurs who have an idea that can revolutionize the industry, who need maybe an investor to partner up with, that have something to offer the industry. And I think all cannabis leaders should be involved. We need to be able to choose from the cream of the crop of up-and-coming future cannabis entrepreneurs who have something to offer. They could offer them jobs. They can partner up with them, maybe offer them some funding for some of their ideas or some of the things they want to do. The cannabis industry can step in and really make a big difference and show everyone that, you know, they care about our youth. They care about the future of the industry. And if they can just find it in their hearts to become sponsors, and we could do so much good. What we plan on doing is we want to have a community center in every state that has medical or recreational marijuana, that we could have courses where youth can be trained to be able to take part in this fast-growing industry. And they can provide equipment. They can provide instructors. They can provide everything that we would need in order for us to be able to train people to be able to handle the job opportunities that are available. And so we're looking for sponsors. We're looking for people that are interested in wanting to help reduce mass incarceration by working with at-risk youth. We want to be able to provide services, you know, throughout the country. And we want to be able to have events that are cannabis friendly. We want the cannabis industry to be involved. And we want them to be able to help out with, you know, the serious problem that we have. And that's reducing mass incarceration and helping at-risk youth.
Now, I really admire your vision. But some people would say, well, youth, I don't know if I think youth should be paired with cannabis. What do you say to those people?
Well, I've met some of the most generous, loving people that I've met have been in the cannabis industry. They all have good hearts, you know, and there's some of them, you know, that aren't in it only for the money. Some of them actually want to make a difference. And this is an opportunity for them to do so. You know, what's the purpose of making all this money if you're not going to do anything good with it?
Absolutely. You know? I would agree. And you know what? I will say this, that since we have been working in LA Miracle Cure, I have met so many rich people under 30. It is not even funny. I mean, it's just shocking. No one's over 30. You know what I mean? And they are just rich. And I feel that, you know, it's also important to show that, you know, it's community service. And when you're doing and working in the community and giving back, it changes your own personal trajectory. That's what you were just saying. And I thoroughly agree with it. I am concerned about the youth that are, let me just say, 20, 21 and under. I feel that if you have not graduated from college and you are college bound, I think that cannabis, if it's not for medical use, should possibly be avoided. What are your thoughts on that? And are you saying that a person could work in cannabis and not use cannabis?
Well, we don't encourage youth to smoke cannabis. I'll make that very clear. When you become an adult, you get to make adult decisions. And cannabis isn't for everyone. You know, some people are okay with it. Some people are not. But we know it does help many people. And if it's something that helps you in a condition that you might have, you know, and you want to treat it with cannabis, it's a lot better than treating it with any prescription drugs that are out there, and or alcohol. And there's a lot of people that actually suffer from a lot of symptoms. Minorities have been using cannabis for a long time. They've used it for maybe being stressed out, you know, as far as having, you know, maybe a hectic work schedule. And some of them need it just to relax. You know, most of the time people didn't talk about it as much. But that was what got them going, to be able to say, yes, I can work a 12-hour day and still come home and clean and do yard work the next day and then go back to work. And that's, you know, and that's not for everyone. You know, some people can actually function and be productive, pot users or cannabis users. And then there's other people that just want to sit there and just relax. And so everybody has their reasons for smoking or not smoking. The young generation, they have to decide if it's for them or not, you know. But if you decide to be a cannabis smoker, you should be a productive cannabis smoker, you know. And if you're not, then maybe you should reconsider.
Well, that is very profound, and I'm glad you cleared that up for us, Robert. Because you know, I think people need to understand just what it takes to work with people who are incarcerated. And to work with people who are on their way to being incarcerated, to having the talent to be able to identify somebody that you see that is showing signs or the schema of being at risk, and being able to confront them and then confront those who have the answer, who are sitting behind a desk that can't seem to plug into the realness of people who really are in need. I stand in awe of you and your program. And so we support you, and that's why I wanted people to hear what you're doing. And everybody knows that I'm a celebrity makeup artist, and I've been involved in the beauty industry for many, 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 many years. I've worked with a lot of famous people, and that's been all fun, all dandy. But I understand that you have an event, and this is another thing that made me see that we were kindred spirits, because your event is coming up in February. Could you tell us, why did you decide to pair with the beauty products and hairstylists and licensed barbers and cosmetologists, and to have this event that would include them as well? Tell us, what was your vision about that?
Oh, thank you. Well, we're having a hair, beauty, and fashion expo on February 18th, and that's cannabis friendly. So we have an outdoor patio area that's going to be set up with different strands and edibles, along with dabbing stations for anyone that wants to go out and medicate and enjoy a wonderful event that's going to take place inside our 50,000 square foot indoor venue. And there there'll be barber competitions that start as early as 12 a.m. And there's also some dance competitions. So you're going to have dance studios coming out competing. You'll also have some high schools as well. And then you have the cosmetologist will be out doing demos on makeup, nails, hair. And they'll be preparing the models for the hair and fashion show. And we have live entertainers that'll be performing, 3 DJs throughout the venue, live music, good food. It's going to be a cocktail party atmosphere with people in the hair, beauty, and fashion industry that's cannabis friendly. And at 8 o'clock, after the fashion show, or towards the end of the fashion show, we have cannabis inspired apparel. So we're asking anyone in the cannabis industry who have really nice apparel or logos that they want to showcase, then they get a chance to be on the runway. We can put up to 20 to 30 models with their hair, their makeup, their nails, coming out and showcasing their cannabis clothing line. And we'll be able to introduce them, and it'll be professionally recorded. So they'll have 3 minutes to introduce themselves, their company, their product, their service. And if they become sponsors, or if they want to have vendor space, It's optional. We'll have a video crew, camera crew that will come out and give them up to 5-minute interview, and they can use it as a promotional video to promote themselves. And I think it's going to be really fun to bring everybody together. And we did it last year, and the models, the performers, the barbers, the cosmetologists, everybody had such a wonderful time with people in the cannabis industry, and we're looking forward to it for this this year as well.
Wow, that is phenomenal that you would think to pair all these different genres together under one roof. And so this is going to be February 18th. Is there a way that people can contact you? Perhaps they want to donate. Perhaps they want to find out if they can have a chapter in their city and state to help at-risk youth. Why don't you give your information? Is there an email or a website that they can concur?
Yes, they can go. If they want to find out information about the event, it's www.3minutefastpitch.org. Again, it's www.3minutefastpitch.org.
We have had Robert Lopez working hard in Arizona with prisonpreventioninfo.org. You can check him out. They've got a lot of things going on down there. And he is working with at-risk youth. We heard a lot of wonderful information. He gave it straight to us, and that's how we like it. You've been listening to LA Miracle Cure, and we're on America Out Loud.